We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you here. And we're also happy once again to have on the program Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County for quite a while now. Once a month, she has been here on the show on a Tuesday to talk about things that grow in the home landscape, answer questions about lawn and garden care. So this can be anything, can be ornamental stuff, can be vegetables, can be trees, shrubs, grass, house plants, whatever you got growing around your house.
Except for mold in the refrigerator. That's what I usually say.
Oh, okay.
I don't handle those.
Except for mold. you can call in and you can talk with Sandy, and she'll do her best to help you out. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And you can also send us email, will-talk@illinois.edu. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much for being
here.
So far, I don't know what to say about the growing season. I guess one thing to say is we haven't had a shortage of moisture. I guess we're doing okay on that. It seems to me like last year, didn't we have a really wet spring, and then some point in the summer, it just stopped.
Yes. And I think we're all kind of think of that even this year. I've been stockpiling water in my rain barrels. Anything else I can come up with?
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll sort of see how it goes. But so far, I guess in terms of rainfall, good, and haven't had too many scorching days. So everything seems to be doing pretty well.
It really is one of those things, things that are in the ground, that were already planted and stuff have just done beautifully. I think a lot of my trees have put on, better growth this year than they ever have, except for those that happen to be in those really, really wet spots that just didn't do well because it was just too wet, and so they get root rot. And so we've seen a few issues with that where we assume it probably was some root rot issues sort of set up by the fact that we've had rain, a good deal of rain over the past couple of years. And for some trees, especially things like spruces, a lot of the evergreens just do not tolerate wet feet for long periods of time. Yeah. And I think that's what we're seeing on some of those.
Okay. Well, we've got a caller already, and we'll talk with him in Philo, line one. Hello.
Fruit tree protection. We planted some little whips that will become fruit trees eventually, and I wanted to know how to protect them since we live in the country from mice and rodents and things like that.
Yeah. Okay. That's a really good question because rabbits love any kind of fruit trees as well as rodents and stuff. And usually what you can do, especially the best thing to really do, and I know it's not all that terribly attractive, is to get something like hardware cloth, that really fine mesh. It's a little heavier duty than chicken wire, and it tends to be a little smaller openings for them. So it also does a good job of keeping out voles and mice and some of those, and just making these sort of cylinders out of hardware cloth and then putting them around the tree, not right next to the trunk, but just sort of around the tree, and just figure that you're just going to have to do that. And actually what I've done is I just leave it on even, summer, winter, the whole thing, just sort of leave it on, and that helps protect those trunks. Once the trees get bigger, then you can sort of take that off. But they're absolutely right to think about it now because they just do some tremendous amount of damage, especially in the wintertime. But even this time of year, they'll pick on them.
So how tall does it have to be?
Yeah, ideally it'd be nice if it was like 3 feet tall. that'd be for those really, really big rabbits. Well, probably, and that's probably has more to do certainly with the wintertime, as in once we get a little snowfall, then actually the rabbits can stand on top of the snowdrifts and then feed on the trees. So we'd like to see it about, if you can get a 3 foot wide, tall wire, and then actually bury it a few inches into the ground. That way you can hopefully take care of some of the voles and mice and stuff that can dig underneath. And if you can just bury that for about 6 inches, then it ends up being about 2.5 feet tall. And that's usually a pretty good way to go. If you can just do that now, then you don't have to think about it for the next few years.
Okay. It seems that so many of the we have problems with animals chewing on plants, and that there are people who say, oh, you can put something on the plant or you can put something around the plant.
Yeah.
But it seems to come down to having a physical barrier really is the thing that works best so that they cannot get at the plant.
Yeah. And it really is one of those things. It depends on the population. If you have a really high population of rabbits, and there's not, especially in the wintertime when there's not much to eat, they will chew through repellents. You know, yeah, it's sort of like, yeah, any of us, you know, rather than starve, we're going to go ahead and go for something that's not as attractive as something else. So, and especially something like fruit trees where they just really love it. So repellents, you can certainly try those, but generally they need to be reapplied after rains for the most part and then reapplied on a regular basis. And if you're like me, I tend to get busy and sort of forget those things. So if you just figure on the beginning, just do the hardware cloth and then you're kind of set. You don't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
Hopefully.
All right. Next caller is in Lafayette, line four. Hello. Caller there, line four, Lafayette. Well, I don't know.
Or maybe,
maybe not. In any case, anybody who wants to call in, got questions, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And by the way, if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that too, will-talk. At illinois.edu. Well, is there anything in particular going on that you might want to mention? I guess maybe you might want to mention the garden walk, which is only a couple of weeks
away. You know, June is sort of garden walk month for all the areas. And so check with your local extension office because a lot of master gardener groups have garden walks, especially through the month of June. But some that are coming up, certainly the Champaign County Master Gardener Garden Walk is coming up June 25th. It's a Saturday. It runs 9 to 4. You can get tickets at the extension office, most of the area garden center, as well as the day of at the Idea Garden, which is just on South Lincoln, just south of the corner of Florida and Lincoln. And then also at the Idea Garden, we're going to have some demonstrations. I'm going to be doing one with one of the master gardeners about lawn care and weed identification, all that good stuff. And then we also have vendors there at the Idea Garden that you can sort of check out and see what's going on in the way of shopping among garden items. We have a couple of really, you know, a lot of the gardens obviously really very nice, but the couple of special gardens that we have are some of the master gardener projects, and one's at the Champaign County Nursing Home. The Alzheimer's and Related Dementia area actually has a secluded garden area that master gardeners have had for a number of years. And it's really beautiful. It's not really open to the public unless you go inside the nursing home. So this is an opportunity to see that. Mm-hmm. And then also the Champaign County Juvenile Detention Center. The master gardeners have been doing a great garden program for there for a number of years. And now you get to see that particular garden. So it's kind of nice to be able to see those kind of projects and how the master gardeners are in their own communities. Also, Mahomet is having their garden club, is actually having a garden walk this Saturday, June 18th. And then the Vermilion County Master Gardeners are having their garden walk on June 26th. So check with your local extension office. I guarantee there's probably somebody in the area that's having a garden walk, which, yeah, it's a great, you know, we're so, you know, in tune to our own garden and work in our garden. Sometimes we forget to stand up and actually walk around and look at other people's gardens and get some inspiration.
Well, so it's a lot of fun to see what other people do. And you get ideas. Maybe you see a plant that you're not familiar with, or someone has done something and you think, oh, well, that looks nice.
Yeah,
maybe I would try doing that.
Sure.
Okay. We'll try again here with the caller in Lafayette. Back to line number four. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Perhaps explanation for something, that hardware cloth is not a cloth or fabric. It's a screen, I believe.
Right, but if you go to the store, you're absolutely right.
I know.
So maybe people don't realize that. But if you go to the store, it's actually called hardware cloth. But you're right. It looks like fine mesh kind of chicken wire. Squares.
It comes in different gaps or openings.
Right.
And I found that a quarter of an inch such is helpful just thrown over my the compressor box for the air conditioner. Keeps unlikely things from falling in it.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Here's a question. What becomes of mulch that you keep adding and contributing every year, and it builds higher and higher? Pretty soon you've got a hill there. What do you do with it?
So this, you're as in mulching your garden beds?
Yeah.
Or,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things that if you add, you know, like 3 or 4 inches of mulch, by the time it decomposes, it only ends up being about an inch or so. So it takes a while to really build up much. I mean, I have beds that I've been mulching for years, and I've never noticed it to be much of a hill. So, and you really shouldn't be putting on more than 3 inches or so, 4 inches would be tops at any one application. So as it decomposes, it seems like it just pretty much gets moved around to the point where I've never really noticed it really getting to the point where I was concerned about it being too high.
Major question, what makes bluegrass in the lawn fall over and lie there flat so you can't mow it?
And it's not that it's getting too tall. before the...
That's true, but it's maybe 3 inches high. You just mold it, and in a day or so, it's falling down again, and sometimes it doesn't get up.
And do those areas turn yellow or brown or
no?
Usually, it's a matter of if there's no disease issues going on. Usually, it's a matter of that the grass is too tall at any one mowing.
Well, it wasn't. I'm not.
Yeah, that would be my only thought.
I don't lying there at perhaps 3-3.5 inches length. It's still given up.
Right, but generally we would then mow it down to probably 2.5.
Should we in hot weather?
Well, generally 2.5 is usually the recommendation, and then when it gets actually nicer weather, you can mow it down to 2.
Yeah.
So maybe you just find if you mow it a little bit shorter. Short mowing is not a good idea, but certainly 2 inches during good weather is fine.
Following the universal recommendation of 3 or even 3.5. But you say I don't need all that.
Well, if you're doing that during the drought season, as in July and August, and you want to mow it higher, then that's usually fine. But then it's not going to lay over because then at that point it's generally starting to go dormant anyway. So it's during this time period right now where the weather's great, lots of moisture, it tends to grow really fast. It certainly could fall over at that length.
Well, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks.
Sure.
Well, this is something we've talked about. I think that in recent years, for maybe a couple of reasons, the recommendation is maybe to mow a little bit higher than we were. I don't know how many years ago. Certainly, you don't want to scalp it. You don't want to mow it really, really short. It's healthier. It competes better with weeds. What's the reason for maybe letting it be a little bit taller?
Yeah, well, really, they found over research and looking at different studies, they really found that when you really mow it short, it tends to also have a very reduced root system. So there's sort of that combination that we really don't like. Maybe people like the way the short grass looks because it looks like a putting green or something. But for most of our grasses that we're going to have in our lawns, they really don't like that. Particularly short mowing, and then the fact that it slows and reduces the root system. And then, of course, then you have issues with drought and all the other things that can happen if you have a reduced root system. So it's trying to encourage that good root systems that we really go to that 2 as the very shortest during really active growing times, and then 2.5 to even 3 during those droughtier periods where you want to make sure that it does still have that good root system. Okay. So it's really a matter of that. And you're right. You don't want it, if it's scalped, then also you're going to open up the grass or actually the soil to weeds. So anytime there's open soil, bare soil, because you've scalped it, now you can get weed seeds coming in and more weeds. So by not scalping, you can also help that issue as well.
Okay. We have some more callers here, back locally for Champagne, line number 1. Hello.
Hi. I have a question related to hostas, and it's, I guess it's a instant gratification versus delayed gratification question.
I'm not sure I'm the person to ask that question.
I have some areas in my yard that I'd like to put some hosta, and of course when I go to the garden centers, there are the big, beautiful hostas ready to go in that are, $30+ a pot. And then there are the smaller ones that aren't going to be beautiful quite as fast. My question is, how long would it take normally for a smaller hosta of the same variety to kind of mature into one of those big, beautiful specimens?
From my experiences, usually about the 3rd and certainly the 4th year, they're really starting to take on the big leaf, big size. So you are going to have to put a little bit more time into it.
Uh-huh.
Now, for some of them, it may be, even 6 years before you really see really, really large leaves and a really particularly large plant. But I would certainly say by the 3rd year, you're starting to see its real personality by then. So that may seem like a long time. I don't know.
Well, I don't think that's too bad because the small pots are very reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm, right.
Boy, you get the mature specimens and start to think about planting around one tree, and it's a significant investment.
Right, But just to realize, and you're actually making a good point that when people look at these really what looks like a small hosta, if you read the label, it may say that it gets, 3 feet wide, and they will get 3 feet wide. Some of those big guys will absolutely get 3 feet wide, so they can cover a big area very quickly.
Okay. Well, I think
okay.
you've convinced
good
me
luck.
It's delayed gratification.
All right. Good luck
well,
with that.
Good.
All right,
it's
suppose
a Zen thing.
I suppose then the other thing, too, this is the case, I suppose, with a lot of things you plant, you really, if they're going to be perennials, mm-hmm. you need to be thinking about they really, if they tell you plant it this distance apart,
right.
well, really
right.
do that because, right. and then that's really hard. You have these little plants, you
I
plant
know.
Them at the distance they say, and it looks, there's so much space, but you do have to think about in a couple of years, it is possible that that plant could be much bigger, and then you're going to have stuff that's too close together and,
right.
you know.
Right. So, I mean, there's ways that you could always put, you could put annuals in between, you know, annual flowers or something in between if it really kind of bothers you that there's so much space or even some ground covers, you know, something that as the hosta gets bigger, then they're going to live happily together somewhere along the line. But it is really tough to think about some of these really big ones because you look at how small the leaves are when they're really young, you think there's no way. But those leaves get huge as the plant gets bigger.
Yeah. Okay. On to other callers. And the next person is in Champaign, line number 2. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. Yes, I was wondering, I have spirea bushes that have just bloomed out beautifully. And I wonder, do I need to cut off those dead blooms after the plant is finished? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I assume it's a pink spirea. It's a spink spirea. That's a new variety.
One.
A spink
yes.
one. You know, they are, and they really have looked beautiful this year, I've noticed. And it's usually just more of an aesthetic thing is to go ahead and remove those flower heads and just sort of look, make them look a little bit nicer. Plus the fact that actually the pink spireas will continue to sort of even send out a few more flowers after you prune those old flower heads off. So it kind of looks better, and then you encourage some more flowering, which is true for a lot of the perennial types of plants, too. So,
All right, then. Atwood is the next caller. This is line 3. Hello.
Hi. Are you familiar with giant blue hyacinth? I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. I've grown the plant for 15 years. It's a herbaceous perennial and gets large blue flower spikes on top, purplish color.
Giant blue hyacinth? Is it
hyacinth?
Yeah, is it Camassia is the genus? Do you know the genus?
I don't know the genus. It was given to me by a elderly friend years ago, and I've just grown it year after year, and it's beautiful. It smells like licorice, and the butterflies love it. The hummingbirds love it.
I'm not sure we're talking about this.
It's a member of the mint family, I believe.
Oh.
But it grows tall, and it has large purple spikes. I hardly see it anywhere at all. And I've given some away.
But it's
if you're not familiar with it, then my question probably won't have much significance.
Well, is this a perennial? It's hardy? You don't have
it's
to.
It's perennial, yes. It comes back every year. Blue and this spikes. Year it came back with a vengeance. In fact, my plants are twice as tall as they normally are, but they haven't formed any flower heads yet. That's what I'm wondering about. I'm wondering if something's gone wrong and they're just. The plant part's growing, but it's failing to bloom.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because what I think of as a blue hyacinth doesn't sound anything like this, because there is a Camassia, which is often called the blue hyacinth, but it's tall, and it blooms much earlier than this.
You can use the leaves for a tea, and like I said, it's got a licorice fragrance.
I may know it by a different name. You might do a Google search, or perhaps David here can, on his fancy computer here, can do
my
a quick
fancy computer.
can do a quick Google search to see if we can find the genus and species on that. But
HY, if you're trying to spell it, it starts HY hyacinth.
Right. Well, we'll see about that. You know, the one thing I have noticed for some flowers, things tended to be a little bit late this year. You know, it was fairly cool there for a while. So
my lilies are 2 weeks behind normal.
Right. So it wouldn't surprise me at all that for a perennial that you have is actually being a little bit late. My peonies were really late. And so because of that cool weather we had earlier, so that wouldn't surprise me. So I certainly wouldn't give up on it.
I think the plant we're talking about here is the purple giant hyssop, H-Y-S-S-O-P. And it is, in fact, here's a picture. Can you see that? It is a mint. And in the mint family, it says that habitat is moist woods and thickets. It grows 2 to 5 feet. Has purple flowers. Flowers July to September. It's a native plant.
Great plant.
It looks pretty cool. And the leaves do have that. They look have that mintish look to them.
So yeah, I know it is hyssop.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
So yeah. So that wouldn't surprise. Actually, mine at home it doesn't have flowers on it yet either. So I noticed that the other day. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, mine are almost 3.5 feet tall now, and they've never gotten that large. And I was afraid that the birds get into that flower bed all winter long, and of course doing what birds do after they eat, and so that bed stays real well fertilized. And I just wondered if they were over fertilized, we're just going to grow and the plant part and not put on any flowers.
Yeah.
But if yours aren't blooming yet,
Yeah, I have a different. I have one called Blue Fortune that has kind of a chartreusey leaf to it, and I noticed just the other day, Sunday, that I was surprised it didn't already have some flower buds on it. So I think they're just a little bit late.
Well, thank you, and I'm glad I know what to call it. Hyssop.
Yeah, hyssop would be the other name.
All right. Very good. Well,
thank you.
We'll talk some more here. Our guest, just by the way, I should reintroduce, is Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, answer questions about things that grow in the home landscape. So if you have a problem or maybe you're thinking about you have a particular place in your yard, you'd like to know, what would be the right thing for that? What would be a good thing for that? And we can maybe make some suggestions. Any and all that is certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And again, we'll go to a caller in Robinson, line number 4, right here. Hello.
Hello, Sandy.
Hi. Uh-huh.
Many, many weeks ago, you recommended Bayer Systemic douse or watering douse to combat a number of sucking and biting insects. A long time I couldn't find it, finally found it at Walmart. They have on those peel-on labels that you can't read until you buy it.
Yeah.
And I was alarmed when I read it that it recommends or it prohibits its use on potted plants and window boxes. I bought it hoping to use it on some potted tropicals that I bring in during the winter, and I know I can't coerce you into disagreeing with the manufacturer's recommendations, but I wonder why on earth not?
Well, it probably has a whole lot to do with the reduced soil volume that you're going to have in a window box and the fact that it's not going to have rain and all the other things going on. And it probably is just one of those things where they did not, the companies have to label it in certain ways and then they have to do research according to that. So it could be they just decided not to go that route and spend the money to get that label, to get that on the label.
Well,
or there could be other really good reasons, but sometimes that's part of it too.
I'm thinking that if I reduce the dosage, the active chemicals would remain in the soil and not be a problem. And I think I'm going to risk doing it.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
You didn't hear that. I know you didn't.
You may find there's some actually other things. I'm not sure what insects that you're having particular problems with, but there certainly are some indoor type insecticides that could be used. Like orthene might be one that actually is pretty good for a lot of the insects.
Well, I bought it principally to fight against Japanese beetles.
Which is very good for that. So
it is good for that according to the recommendations.
Right.
But I have dahlias planted in giant urns. If I don't do something to fight the beetles, I'll never see a flower, only an eaten bud.
Right. There might be some other one in there. Actually, I think it's another one that actually has a pyrethrum in it that tends to be good for, it has a quick knockdown on it and then has some residual in it as well. So I know you already purchased it. You're probably not crazy about purchasing something else, but you may find there's actually one that comes in as a hose-in sprayer.
Comes in what?
What's called a hose-end sprayer. It's actually a sprayer that attaches to your hose. And then you use that on the plant.
Uh-huh.
And then it has because I've used that on my roses before, and it has a pyrethrum in it as well as the imidacloprid, which is the other stuff that we use for the systemic.
When you use it on your roses, does it ban the beetles from chewing on leaves and flowers?
Yeah, it does a very good job on the leaves. It's really tough. It gets a quick knockdown, you know, of those beetles that happen to be there. So that part's good.
They're already there, huh?
Right. And it does a good job on the leaves. What I have found is that the flowers themselves, it doesn't seem the systemic doesn't seem to go into the flowers very well. So generally you still get some damage on the flowers.
Okay, well thank you.
Yeah,
and I'm glad
good luck.
You haven't violated your principles. Bye-bye.
Good luck. Right. It's tough. Okay. It really is tough sometimes.
Well, here now I've got a question for you that's come in by email, and we've even got audio visuals or visuals that come with it. So you're going to have to come over here and take a look at the picture here. Okay, so let's look at the text here. We have someone who says, I have a tree in the backyard that's strange in appearance. There's full foliage, no major gaps, and then all around the tree there are dead limbs that reach beyond the live growth. It almost looks like there was a dead tree and now a live tree growing in it. Can I just cut out the dead stuff now, or do I need to wait? And okay, so here's what it looks like. I'm not even sure what kind of tree that is. It does look very strange, doesn't it?
It does look very strange.
Yes. Do you think that they would be safe just to cut the dead stuff out of it?
Yeah, generally on trees, it's always a good idea to cut out the dead stuff. It may be a little bit harder. I mean, that is an odd-looking tree. They absolutely...
And it looks just like they
described.
It looks exactly like they described it.
But looking at the trunk, you can tell it's one tree. It's not that two trees have sort of come in there together. So I definitely cut off the dead stuff and then go from there and see what happens. That if there's dieback for some reason... it's hard to tell what the tree is. I don't know whether it's an ash. It doesn't really look like an ash. Maybe a maple. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's really hard to tell from the picture.
From that picture. That might. I don't know if that would help if the person who wrote in knows what kind of tree it is.
It actually does help. I mean, because what we found for a lot of plants in particular, they have certain problems, and they're common problems. And so, you know, common problems are just that, common. So often if we know the species of the plant, it helps immensely when it comes to diagnosing what's wrong with
it. But it sounds like basically your bottom line is,
I would go ahead and cut the dead stuff. It does look funny, though.
It does look very
funny.
Strange.
Halo of dead branches.
All right. Well, here's another tree question coming in by email, and it has to do with spruce trees. Many branches on a mature spruce in their yard have lost all their needles and appear to be dead. There are other branches that look normal. My tree is in a position that is probably well drained. I notice this browning condition on other spruce trees around town. What's afflicting these trees? Is there any treatment that would allow the tree to recover?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of problems with spruce trees this year, in particular blue spruce. And the problem is it gets a little difficult because there may be several things going on. Obviously, the hit on one of them is the fact that the spruce trees really don't like wet soils, but it sounds like they've kind of ruled that out. So people have to sort of think through that. Is this an area that maybe I have clay soil and the clay tends to stay wet, so that might be something they need to think about. But the other part is we are seeing a few disease issues, certainly. One of the other things I should mention, too, is that, you know, you always have to think through, is a salt spray injury, could it be something that... You know, is it right next to the road? Those kind of things people need to think through a little bit. There are some disease issues. We are seeing one of the needle diseases called rhizosphera, but it tends to, what people notice is that second year's growth, not this year's growth, but second year's growth tend to turn this kind of reddish brown, and then the needles fall off. But the new growth stays where it is. It sounds like the whole branch is dying on this from their description, so that may not be rhizosphera. Eventually, those branches could die if this happens to it over and over and over again. Those branches could die if this has been going on for a number of years. There, on these really big blue spruces, there's another disease called Cytospora, which tends to sort of these dead branches, and the whole branch will die. And it's very sort of characteristic where it produces these sort of holes of dead stuff. But if people follow those dead branches back to the trunk, they'll see all this white sappy stuff. And that's a good indication of that it may be Cytospora. And we see this on older blue spruces in particular. So they probably sounds like they need to do a little bit more investigation. They could send samples to the U of I plant clinic. They certainly could do that, or take it to the local extension office and get a better idea of maybe what's going on. But I think they need to do a little bit more investigation as into, you know, is that white sappy stuff there? Is there anything else that might be going on? And they certainly, and unfortunately, blue spruces, they get spruce spider mites. There's several things that spruce trees can get. So it's kind of a CSI thing going on by the time you figure out what it is. So,
okay. We're talking this morning with Sandy Mason, and we'll talk some more in a moment after a short break. This is Focus.
Hi, I'm Kevin Kelly. Summer is a terrific time for theater in our area, including musical theater from the Champaign-Urbana Theater Company and the Station Theater in Urbana. CUTC will present West Side Story, and the Celebration Company at the Station offers Hairspray. Both shows open Thursday night and will have live previews on the Tuesday edition of Live and Local. We're your performance connection, weekdays from noon to 1 on FM 90.9.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here during the week, and we have 10 different guests, 10 different topics. In the second hour today, Rich Warren will be here. He writes about consumer electronics, mostly audio and video, for the News Gazette. And if you're having some problems, or maybe you're having thinking about buying something new, and you're very confused by all the choices, and it certainly can be very confusing, we'll take whatever questions you have, and I think Rich can help you out. Tomorrow on the show, a couple of health programs. One dealing with mental health and dealing with actually what is a really basic question, and that is, what is mental illness? Our guest will be Richard McNally. He's professor in the Department of Psychology at Harvard University and has authored a book on the subject. We'll also talk about treating pain and non-surgical treatments for pain, particularly neck and back pain. And our guest for the show will be Dr. Hyun-Chul Jung. He is a pain management specialist and anesthesiologist at the Carl Physician Group in Urbana. You can get the schedule for the entire week and next week and as far out as it goes by going to our website. That's will.illinois.edu. You can also listen to past programs there. Sandy Mason is with us this morning. Sandy is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month and answers questions. And also again this month, as we have for the past couple of months, we will have a chat, an online chat after the show. Sandy will stick around for a little while and answer some more questions for a half an hour. And we'll answer the questions online. And so you can join that chat by going to our website. Again, that's will.illinois.edu. Right now, though, if you have a question, you can call. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And you can also send us an email, will-wyll-talk@illinois.edu. Here's a caller, somebody else, Champaign. Line one. Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks. I just thought I'd mention before I asked my question that somebody was talking about Japanese beetles. Excuse me. I found last year just using neem oil on my hostas and other plants really seemed to get rid of them very well. Excuse me. And my silly question is, when you deadhead flowers, how far down should you cut? Just all the way to the stem? In the past, I've just kind of pulled on the blossoms, and that seemed to work. But this is the first time I've deadheaded irises, and I'm not sure how far down to go.
Yeah, with irises, you actually want to take the whole stalk off. And that's probably true also for... Well, it kind of depends on what it is. You know, if it's a daylily that's completely spent and really formed all its flowers, then you might take the whole stalk off. But something like that, normally daylilies, you just take off the flower itself because that whole inflorescence, of course, will continue to flower. So it kind of depends on the plant. But you really kind of have to look and see if there's any buds, any other buds right there. But generally, you're going to go ahead and take the whole stalk off, certainly with irises, but... For some plants, you kind of have to look and see how it's growing, if that makes any sense. So things like blue salvia and stuff you may find, you just want to take off that one spent flower inflorescence itself, and then, you know, the new ones will form off to the side.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right. Is that do you generally want to deadhead, essentially deadhead everything, with the idea that should promote, in some things, either it'll just look better, but yeah, there are some things actually that by doing that, it should promote more flower.
Right, and it often does. for a lot of things is to go ahead and remove those flowers. Now, obviously, for things like peonies and stuff, they bloom once, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
But for most of everything else, for a lot of other things, I should say, just by removing those flowers and not, because if you think about it, a plant's whole purpose in life is to go ahead and form seeds and reproduce. So once it's formed seeds and done its thing, then it tends to, okay, I'm kind of in that mode rather than growing more flowers and stuff. So not letting them produce seed is often a good idea so that they'll continue to flower. So it's just, and plus it usually looks better for a lot of things. To me, it's kind of relaxing. It's a great way to relax, I think, at the end of the day or whatever. Just go around and deadhead things a little bit. It's really kind of...
Well, I think even if it didn't, it does have a good function for the plant, but I also think it doesn't look real attractive with these little dead stalks there on the plant. So I think it just looks a little nicer if you clean
it
up that way.
It does.
All right. Basotum, line number one is our next caller right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I haven't ever read the label on things, but for grub control for lawns, does that hurt earthworms? Or do you know, because early in the spring, I noticed I had some grubs around. I haven't actually done the trick where you dig up the yard and all that business, but I'm just curious if it actually hurt anything besides the grubs.
I'm not sure. You know, I suppose it depends on what product you're using. And so I'm not sure how to answer that, to tell you the truth. There are certainly some, you know, pesticides or insecticides that we know hurt earthworms, and 7-carbaryl happens to be one of those. At this point, I'm not sure if imidacloprid and some of those others, I'm not sure I've ever seen that it hurts, you know, earthworms in particular. So.
I'll tell you who knows, and he's going to be on the show this week.
Oh, good.
Phil Nixon.
Great.
That's the guy to ask.
Great.
He's the guy to ask. He's going to be on the show Friday at 11. And I'm sure that he would be able to answer that question. I'm confident.
The earthworm dude.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the. I mean, grub treatment is something that we always talk about when he's on the show. It's probably a little early in the season even to be worrying about that. But in any case, he's the guy that will know. So if you can call in on Friday, he can tell you.
Great. I have another question about butterfly bushes. And I had one for years and years, and I always cut it clear back. And I don't know, are you supposed to cut butterfly bushes clear back to the ground, or will they rejuvenate up the stalks? You're supposed to cut so much off, or?
Well, usually you want to cut some off simply because they look better, so they don't get kind of tall and rangy. And usually what happens is they die back anyway because of winter. But generally what I do is just sort of wait until you start to see buds starting to form or starting to leaf out a little bit, and then I cut it back, you know, accordingly. But I usually leave, I don't cut it clear to the ground, I usually leave at least probably 4 decent buds, and that usually seems to get it small enough so it still looks good, but gives it plenty of opportunity to go ahead and leaf out again.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, well, I think most of mine must have usually died clear back because they didn't flower, and then when I cut them off, they didn't grow anything out of it. So anyway,
They can be a little touchy sometimes over the winter time.
Yeah, I had one for years and years, and it finally died. And I put several out last year, and a couple of them made it through the winter, and a couple of them didn't. Yeah. Anyway, great program.
Okay, good luck.
Like hearing you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, we'll go on here to the next caller. This is Urbana, line number 2. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about a lilac hedge. It's a little leaf lilac, and it's grown too tall. It was planted too close to a deck, so most of the green stuff is above the 2-foot level, and it's leaning over the deck. We need to prune it. What's the best way to do that?
Wow.
It's probably about 6 feet tall right now, and it's nice and full once you get up to where it's leafing out. It blooms nicely for a short period of time. It's probably a Miss Kim. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it may be. They tend to get a little bigger than a lot of us thought. So how tall are you wanting it to be?
Well, actually, I can live with the height, but I would like to back it off of the deck because it's to the point you can't sit on. There's a bench seat on the, along the edge of the deck. And it does provide nice privacy.
Right. So you just want to cut it back I mean, and actually this right. would be a good time to do that, you know, after they've flowered and stuff, then to go ahead and prune them back. The only reason I'm hesitating a little bit is that I wouldn't use hedge trimmers or anything, because the thing right. I've noticed that they just don't, a lot of these smaller lilacs just don't tolerate some of the pruning that we might typically think of for the big lilacs, where you basically come to the ground and then go for it. So they don't seem to like hedge trimmers at all, as in they don't flower well after that.
So I go in with the hand pruners? Do
yep.
I cut back the big branches? Because I'm going to end up with what looks, for this season, like mostly sticks.
Mm.
Will it green out again, or...?
I would. It should go ahead. As long as those branches are alive, you should go ahead and get new growth off of them.
Okay.
So if I'm visualizing... So you're going to take, what, a foot off?
Actually, if I, you know, go in and don't just head everything off, then I'd be pulling out 3 foot lengths from... the base where, you know, where each branch comes off. Wouldn't that be...
Right. I guess I was thinking of taking individual branches and not taking them to ground necessarily, but
well,
just cutting back to the
next... That's half height. It's probably
okay.
6 feet tall.
But there... I guess I was thinking more that you could take individual branches and then take it down to the point where there's a side branch coming off.
Okay.
Does that make
okay.
sense?
Yep.
So you take it to a side branch, and then usually that's enough. They'll go ahead and leaf out again for you.
Okay, and we also, this house had a lot of uncared for long-term plants, and there are two huge, unattractive lilac things out front that I'm trying to figure out how to tame back. I'd like, wouldn't mind keeping them, but I don't know how to prune them back.
So are they the big lilacs? Or?
Yeah, those are the big lilacs.
Yeah, the big lilacs actually can take some really heavy pruning. You can really cut them, and usually what we do is take out the older branches, and I don't know how this one is, but you know, some of them only have just like one or two older branches, but usually we take out the older branches and leave some of the younger stuff, because
so
it flowers better anyway.
Sorry, the things that look like water shoots, you can leave, and,
yes.
and those will eventually...
Yep. And they flower better on that
okay.
younger growth anyway. So removing that older stuff. And I know sometimes it's really hard to get in there to remove the old stuff. So sometimes
yeah.
people just take them down to the ground and then
yeah.
go from
I
there.
I thought I had read that you take a third of the old ones out. And I tried
that's
to do
idea.
That. But I didn't see anything good happening in response.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's generally the idea. You're absolutely right. Is to take out part of that old growth every year.
Uh-huh.
To
if
encourage
you cut back
the new
to
stuff.
A branching point, will that work as well?
Yeah, just heading them back if you want to go that route,
yeah.
too.
Okay.
But sometimes actually taking out some of that older stuff encourages new stuff to come up from the base.
Okay.
So you have younger growth.
Now is a good time.
Sure.
Okay, excellent. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, very good.
Bye.
And let's see, we go to line number one next. Champagne. Hello.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Hi.
Hello. I enjoy your show, and I learn a lot. And one of the things I did this year is I planted my lettuce on a shelf because the rabbits have always gotten it before. And it's doing very well, but it keeps on growing up. And even when I cut it, it's growing up. I'm trying to do it so I can get more of the leaves to eat.
Growing up. I'm not sure I understand.
Going straight up instead of spreading out. Is that how it's supposed to grow?
On leaf lettuce, I assume?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, they just grow straight up.
But only it's flowering at the top. Do I just break those little flowers off?
Yeah, it's going to seed. So generally, it's not long for this world at this point.
Oh. Well, if I take off those seeds, it seems like the bottom is regenerating. So I should do that?
Yeah, I definitely take off any of the, when they start to send up a flower stalk like that, take that off.
Okay.
Completely, because you don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
But usually they're getting now to the point where they're kind of, those particular plants are kind of ending their life, so to speak. And so it's a good time. You could go ahead and try another planting.
Oh, I have done that.
I
have different
get new ones coming up. Sure,
it's
sure.
It's doing great this year.
Oh, good, good. Mm-hmm. Well, good.
Okay, well, thank
okay.
you very much.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I would think pretty soon here that it would be getting a little hot to
it
be
is,
growing
yeah.
lettuce, since
yeah,
I think of that as being a cool season crop. Although, then again, that's the kind of thing that then at the end of the year when you're thinking, gee, wouldn't it still be nice to have something out there growing,
right.
you can do those kinds of things
right,
again.
Right, absolutely. So, what you'll find is that summer crop tends to be one of those that really develops quickly, and you have to pick it quickly. And it may not be, sometimes it has a little bit of a bitter taste to it, but if you go ahead and pick it and put it in the refrigerator for a couple of days, it tends to sort of lose that bitterness that tends to be a little bit higher in the summertime. And then certainly when we get starting back into even August and September is to start replanting again mm-hmm. for a fall crop.
Okay, 5-6 minutes at least left in this part of Focus. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And if you have questions about plants, things that grow in the home landscape, you're having a problem or you're looking for some suggestions, you can call us 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And, of course, you can also send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Is there anything that's really newsworthy that you just might mention? Or maybe there's something in particular just in association with this point in the growing season that you would want to mention?
Yeah, I think probably, well, a couple things. People need to be thinking about bagworms. So if they've had bagworms on their spruces, which we've seen a really big influx of bagworms over the last few years, especially on spruces, but they'll get on a lot of other evergreens as well, arborvitae and a few others. This is time to start thinking about it, but this is not the time to start spraying. Generally, we're talking about the end of June, 1st of July, before we think about really spraying, because you want to spray when the little bitty guys are out, because those are the ones you're going to be able to kill. At this point, they're still in the bag, and you can't do too much other than pulling them off or cutting them off and going from there. But you'll know what areas you need to really start thinking. And you know, one bag can have hundreds of bagworms in it, so it doesn't take long to get a high population of bagworms and really have a big issue on your spruces where it can just kill off major branches. So that's one thing to think about. Also, in your lawn area, if you are thinking about doing a fourth application where you normally do four applications a year on your lawn, this would be the time to do that. Usually around Father's Day is the time to go ahead and do that. But only do that if you're really planning on using irrigation through the summertime. If it starts to look like, you know, we're not getting any rain, the grass wants to go dormant, if you are going to do that fourth application here in June, you'd want to go ahead and figure on irrigating after that. If the water spigot turns off come July, let's hope not. But.
All right. We'll see if we have some more callers now. We'll see if I can get them all, and we'll start with Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm from Rochester, New York, and we are famous for our lilacs. And when you move somewhere else, you kind of like to have the same plants around you you had in your other home. I put in some lilacs about 2 years ago, and they've done nothing, absolutely nothing, and I'm heartbroken about that. So I wondered what I'm doing wrong, or do I have to wait another year or whatever.
So they're just not growing at all?
They're growing. They're growing tall, but I haven't seen any flowers.
Mm-hmm. And then they're getting plenty of sun. It's not too wet.
Yep.
Okay, it's not too wet. And then, of course, you know, having been around lilacs, of course, is that you always want to make sure that you're not pruning at the wrong time, but you probably know that.
I haven't pruned at all.
I haven't pruned them at all, so people need to realize that they do actually flower on last year's wood, so you want to make sure you don't prune them at the wrong time. So I'm not sure what to tell you, you know, beyond that, whether it's sometimes it's just a time. They just need to mature to the point where they'll go ahead and flower. Mm-hmm. But usually they flower at a fairly young age, so I'm a little surprised by that. I don't know what particular ones you have. But if it's ones you've grown before and feel pretty comfortable that ones that actually flower fairly early. So I think at this point I would just, you know, if you want to use some, you know, fertilizer for flowering plants, that would be a good idea. If you want to, you know, you feel you want to encourage some more growth. But beyond that, just, you know.
Should I trim them down a bit?
Unless you really feel like you need to, I wouldn't.
Okay.
Unless it's really something that isn't necessarily going to encourage flowering.
So then, I'm feeling like the gods are against me. The other thing,
because you moved,
is hydrangea. I'm getting it's in a different spot, but I put them in last year and they didn't flower this year.
Okay, and they're not setting buds because mine are just now sort of setting buds and getting going. So.
Well, there's three of them, and one of them might be doing the buds. But right. The other two just look like they're having a wonderful time turning green.
Yeah. Well, I'd give them a little bit of time because I've noticed that on some of my blue ones are not setting bud yet either. But I have one of the endless summers, one of the ones that's supposed to bloom on new and old wood both, is actually starting to bloom now. So I'd give that maybe a little bit more time.
Okay.
Especially if they're putting on good growth at this point.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I don't know. I guess time. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Let's go on to Matt Toon, line two. Hello.
I think the previous caller actually had the answer for one of my questions in your response. I have lilacs that aren't doing so well, but they're in clay, and they don't get sun very early in the spring, not till the sun starts to move around do they get full sun. They get dappled sun until then. So that's probably my problem with those.
Yeah, I think, and then they really don't like really wet soil. So the clay, of course, as you know, can stay wet for long periods of time. We've certainly had plenty of rain. So that might be, so I don't know if there's a way you can move them.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try. It's my only hope at this point.
Yeah, sometimes that's the best bet.
Yeah. The other question is irises that don't seem to bloom very well. And they're in the same soil, though I don't plant them deep. And with the mulch that I've applied the past 5 years, the topsoil is pretty fertile.
Mm-hmm.
But they still don't seem to be blooming very well. In fact, I would say I get 25% of them that bloom.
And these are the big bearded irises we're talking about?
Yeah.
Or okay, yeah. Okay. And then you've divided them, or have they been in the same spot for a long time?
I've also tried dividing them.
Okay, okay. And they are in the same area where they're getting like dappled sun instead of full sun?
No, I've moved them, in fact, over to where they get almost full sun.
Okay, okay. So they should be doing, they absolutely should be, I would think, in the full sun, generally if they have some maturity to them, you know, the older rhizomes and stuff that as right. in, you know, because sometimes when you divide them, it takes a year or so for them to really sort of catch up. But you know, if they've been there for a couple of years, I would think you should start seeing some flowers by now. So I'm not sure what to tell you on that. So that's one of those things. Sometimes it's really hard to sort of figure it out. But a lot of times it's maturity. They just plants need to get bigger.
I'm wondering, because when I did divide them, I found some of the, what is it that eats the rhizome? The, not a worm, but...
Oh, the iris borer. Yeah, it's a caterpillar.
Right. Yeah. I found some of those in the rhizome. I'm wondering if maybe... that has had a lasting effect, or if it's infested them in some way?
Well, because they can certainly get into some of the bigger rhizomes, so you end up saving smaller rhizomes because of it. And because they're smaller rhizomes, they tend to need to get a little bit bigger before they start to flower better for you. So that could be an issue just because of the size of the rhizomes you end up keeping. But if you're sure to this point you really don't have iris borers, then I wouldn't think that would be the issue. But
okay.
Okay?
Well, I'll just watch them. Maybe it's maturity.
Yeah, that would be my best bet, if you can figure out everything else.
Well, we'll try real quick to get one more caller here. This is Danville, line 4. Hello.
Yes, I've got tomato plants, and I've got little light brown spots all over the leaves on about the bottom third of the plant. What should I do about that?
Yeah, you may be starting to get some of the leaf spot diseases that we certainly can get on tomatoes. And it usually starts on those lower leaves, and then eventually the leaves will turn yellow and fall off, and it sort of moves its way up. So you may want to think about a fungicide program if you're comfortable with using fungicides. Then I would remove those leaves if you can. Go ahead and remove those leaves that are infected and get them out of there. It is a fungus, more than likely, and so you'd have to go ahead and take those off and get them out of there so the fungus doesn't spread. Sometimes just good sanitation and good air circulation can help immensely, but, you know, we've just had such wet weather to the point where it's been perfect for a lot of the fungal diseases. So I'd go with one of the vegetable-type fungicides that are out there and start on a regular fungicide program and remove those infected leaves.
Yeah, I've sprayed it down with Daconsil, and I just wondered how often I should do that.
Well, I'd read the label on what it says, and I'm not sure on that particular one how often it is for those. A lot of it depends on if the leaves stay wet for long periods of time. If we get into a drier period where we're not getting a lot of heavy dew and stuff, it's not nearly as crucial. But if the leaves stay wet for long periods of time, that's when you're going to get the disease issue. So sometimes it's just a matter of how wet the leaves are.
I have to jump in here because we're at the end of the time. We're going to have to stop. We'll have to wrap it up. Sandy will be back on the program next month. However, something special we've been doing for a while now. Sandy will stick around for another half an hour to answer questions online. So you right now, you can move over there. If you have a question, you go to our website. It's WILL.illinois.edu. You can also look for Sandy on the program Illinois Gardener on Thursday nights, 7
I'm
o'clock.
I'm hosting.
She's hosting.
I'm hosting this Thursday.
Folks,
hosting?
You're not going to want to do anything else. Get a TV dinner. Get
yeah,
ready.
Right.
Be there in front of the TV. 7 o'clock Thursday night, WILL TV. Thank you very much.
Sure.